Hi, K-Watchers. It's Leanne.
Hi, everyone. It's Juliet. Welcome to the K-Watch Party.
Today, we have Culinary Class Wars episodes 9 and 10. The battling chefs try to win over the stomachs of mukbang YouTubers in restaurant wars, and then try to win over hearts with a dish that changed their life. Will anyone's dish thaw Judge On's cold, dead heart? Let's find out. Good morning, Juliet. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I am polishing off an omelet my lovely husband made me for breakfast this morning. So,
oh, damn.
Starting it off with some protein, some love.
Look at that. Is this a usual thing that he makes breakfast for you?
Absolutely not. Oh. I think he was making himself an omelet.
And then he saw you out of the corner of his eye and is like, oh, damn.
Thought of me. The thing about him is he's allergic to uncooked eggs. So, not to like bring his omelet down, but like.
I hope he's not listening to this podcast.
He just overcooks
it.
Yeah, because that's just how he has to do it to survive.
Oh, God.
As a person in this world and not die of anaphylactic shock. So he kind of doesn't know how to make like a
overly runny, cooked egg.
Yeah,
so, soft egg.
I'll still take it.
That's powerful information if you ever need him to go into anaphylactic shock.
If my husband mysteriously dies and like nobody knows.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll know. We'll know.
Definitely do a blood test for buckwheat or eggs in his system. I'm like a Russian KGB. That's how I kill my enemies.
It's like, remember in Parasite? One of the family members was allergic to peach fuzz. And so then the maid would
throw it
up into the air like fairy dust.
I'll be sprinkling raw egg.
Yeah, just egg him.
Everyone in this house better watch their back because I know what the allergies are. And I'm the one cooking. Anyway,
you know, that's actually funny because I just saw a story about a woman who was killed in her own home along with some random man. And her nanny was at the house. And the nanny called 911 and, you know, she was distressed. Turns out the nanny was having an affair with the husband.
Oh, no.
You know, the classic story.
I mean, can you be more basic?
Yeah.
You know?
Right. It was a nanny, but what she had done was she had solicited some man on a weird fetish site. The things that you learn, like the things that are out there in the world sometimes really shock me, but also don't surprise me. So she solicited this random man who had a fetish to the house. And then she killed that man to make it look as though he was the one that killed the mom of the house.
I mean, it was a murder-suicide?
Yeah.
Oh, my
gosh.
Just
crazy.
This poor fetish guy just walked into
exactly.
This weird trap.
He just wanted to suck some toes.
Oh, gross. Okay, that was like a weird, dark turner. There is a lot on my newsfeed of women poisoning their husbands slowly. It's like fentanyl or like bleach, and they'll put it in their coffees.
Yeah.
And then the men get suspicious, so they set up these cameras. And so they catch them red-handed basically pouring bleach into his coffee in the morning. It's very bold.
Wait, this is on your algorithm?
Yes. I get a lot of
these. You have been Googling a little bit of how to induce anaphylactic shock without it being obvious.
Yep. So yeah, anyway, sorry, dark and twisty corner. Moving on, I was going to ask you, last week on the pod, you said you were going to try to make your dad, because he came up to visit for his birthday, the seaweed soup that leader of the White Spoons Chef Choi's team made in the battle. Did you end up making it?
It was a seaweed soup that he blended and added cream to and made into a soup that you could, you know, possibly eat with bread. So I was really inspired by that.
And it's like a birthday dish usually.
Yeah, typically Koreans eat seaweed soup for their birthday. And actually, I would love to talk about this history because The lore is that many years ago, Koreans saw that postpartum whale females would eat a ton of seaweed after giving birth.
Oh, that's where
and
this
so
comes
they were
from.
Like, oh, it must be so nutritious. I mean, who knows? But this is what, you know, people say. And so then now postpartum Korean women have to eat seaweed, some form of seaweed, every single day for at least 30 days. And I ate it not just in soup form, but in like a salad form. And then I read that actually you could overdose on it, like certain vitamins, it's too much. But it is really good for repairing your body and it has a lot of fiber and restoring blood and whatnot. Anyway, so then you eat that on your birthday as like
a healthful.
Well, healthful, but also because you have to remember what your mother went through.
Oh, is that why?
Yeah. Like as a remembrance of how much your mother suffered.
My God, that is so Korean.
You know, this comes up later with like the mom connection. I was like, it's so deep. There's something twisted about like,
so fucking
especially men and their mothers, Korean men and their mothers. And in fact, you know, I went through some really difficult births with my two kids. So I want them to remember what I went through. Anyway, so I was going to do it for my dad because it was his birthday and he came up to visit. But then I was like, it felt like I was taking something pure and adulterating it. And I didn't want to take the risk that it wouldn't be received well.
Yeah.
So I didn't do it.
Do it for your husband. Who's less critical. And you didn't give birth to him, so.
Yeah, that's right.
That actually comes up in episode 10 when Edward Lee makes the bibimbap, right? It's a very sacred thing and we could talk about it. I have thoughts.
Oh, I have thoughts too.
But that is kind of the same sentiment that Judge On has about bibimbap.
Well, I'm actually curious about your philosophy about food because, you know, like we eat Panda Express and that's an adulterated version of Chinese food. Do you enjoy that? Do you have an appreciation for it because it is inspired by Chinese food?
Oh, I love Panda Express. I have no shame.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, exactly. I get a double Kung Pao. Give me some fried rice. I want an orange Fanta with it. Like the whole thing. I think, you know, you Koreans just hold things too tight.
Well, we have to because it's been taken away from us so many times.
Yeah, and I think American Chinese food is a thing. But like, you know, Korean Chinese food is a thing. You know, it's just kind of...
The Chinese were okay with it going out and being reinterpreted.
Yeah, we don't hold on to it so dear. And I think there is like a Chinese culture here in, at least in California, like you go to Chinatown, San Francisco, and there is, you know, fortune cookie factory, right? And like, that's like a special place because that's still part of the diaspora and the history of Chinese and Chinese Americans everywhere. So I don't know. We have a different.
I think Koreans and Chinese have a very different immigrant experience and origin experience. But funny enough, this tracks back to like what we were talking about ASMR. Remember how you were making fun of the fact that I forced you to watch this woman eating a whole octopus and smacking her lips in the ASMR that I really enjoyed. Somehow my algorithm fed me this clip from Colbert where Zoe Saldana came on.
Okay.
And she's like, oh, I love mukbangs, which of course, you know, pronounced incorrectly, mukbang. But she's like, I love mukbangs and ASMR. Oh my God. They just like, I love it. It's like, just like the slurping of the noodles. He's like, what kind of noodles? Because her husband's Italian. She's like, oh, I love like Chinese noodles, Korean noodles, Thai noodles. We all know, and you know, noodles came from China, but I won't say that because I can't say that because my husband is Italian.
Oh, Zoe Saldana said that?
Yeah, she said even Italian noodles came from China, but you know, whatever.
I mean, his name is Marco Polo.
Her husband's name is Marco Polo?
No, the guy Marco Polo brought.
Oh, right.
Noodles. You know, but let me just say, we don't know the Chinese guy who gave it to Marco Polo, but fuck, we know Marco Polo's name in history. Anyway, that's hilarious.
Zoe also was just saying she loves the sounds, and Colbert looked at her like she was a crazy person.
There is a, it's not misophonia, but there is
some scientific name for, you get a little bit of a rise out of hearing things. And I don't, you know, that sounds kind of sexual to say, but it's not quite that. It's just like there's something with your nervous system even about hearing something calm. There was an episode many, many years ago on This American Life about people who really enjoyed those things. And this was way before mukbangs or ASMR was a thing. And it was like a niche, probably an erotic section of the internet. And I remember feeling very confused by it. But then once I started to hear it, I started to feel something inside of my body that like reverberated a little bit.
You're a very tactile, physical person.
Yes.
I have to say.
Yes.
Well, I can't wait to talk about mukbangs with you. So let's get into episodes 9 and 10. We ended episode 8 as the teams were forming restaurant wars. The three teams that had originally been formed had to vote off their least valuable member to form a sadder underdog fourth team. Two of the Chinese chefs, one from Edward Lee's team and one from Triple Star's team, left on their own accord. We saw that in the last episode. The cliffhanger was who was going to get kicked off of King of the White Spoon Chef Choi's team. They definitely don't seem aligned on who's going to go.
And it was very secretive who they were voting for. And so when it was announced, I think it was quite a shock to the person who was selected.
Yes. It felt very Survivor.
Yes.
Voting them off the island. So the person voted off the island was that older white spoon, the Japanese chef on. And he was very shocked.
He was shocked. And I thought it was shocking. Chef Choi didn't even say goodbye to him. Just let him walk off. Like nobody acknowledged it, which I thought was even worse.
Right. Or like, thank you for everything. Yeah, good luck. Sorry.
Right. Or like, oh, you know, we had to do this for the sake of the show. Like not, none of that. It was like, they just watched him walk away.
Bye Felicia.
Not even a, yeah, bye mm-hmm. Felicia. Not even a tap on the shoulder.
Chef Choi says in an interview, the reason why he chose Auntie Omakase number one over this very prestigious white spoon was because he needed her to make seaweed. So he needed this auntie making seaweed more than he needed this white spoon. I mean, there's two lessons here. A, watch your back, trust no one. And then B, you've got to make yourself indispensable in these games.
Yes, right.
If you've got it.
And in life.
And in life, you got to be strategic.
Yeah,
you or at least kiss enough ass, right?
Right.
I think the other white spoon.
Yes, right. He's the other Japanese chef. And I don't know what he was doing, but he kisses Chef Choi's ass and tries to be his right-hand person.
Yeah. And so he got to stay. So the underdog team, they do have one leg up, is that they were able to see everyone else's concepts before they made their own menu.
Right.
And so I think if they were a little bit more strategic, they would have brought in some more lessons.
Absolutely.
But they kind of didn't.
They're all kind of individual contributor personalities. I'm going to do my own thing. And they thought that that would be enough.
Right. And they're like, my dish has been on a YouTube channel show, so that should be enough.
Right. Oh, everyone at my restaurant likes this dish. To be frank, there was nothing about their foods that were really standouts. What we had mentioned last week about the Gazillionaire's restaurant was that they did things that people couldn't typically get anywhere else for that price point. These guys are like, you're getting food that you get on this, you know, at hole-in-the-wall restaurants for relatively cheap. They probably eat this very frequently. So nothing was very special to them.
The two Chinese chefs make dongpo roe and mapo tofu, guys.
Again.
Cannot. Like, these Chinese chefs literally don't know how to do anything else.
I'm sure they were very tasty.
They looked good, though. So I've been looking up dongpo roe in our area to take you. And it's very hard to find. There are not many restaurants.
Huh.
Even down in the South Bay where there's more Chinese people, it's not very common.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So next, if we're ever in LA again together, you have to come up to the northern part of LA and we'll get
it. But they
it.
Have a lot of places in LA that do it.
There's a few places. There's a Shanghainese restaurant in Arcadia that I think is famous for it. And my mom's brought us there.
I just looked it up and there's a place next to my parents' house that does dongpo roe called Meizhou Dongpo.
Oh.
And the food looks so good. Oh my gosh, look, they have that fish that the Queen of Dim Sum made.
Oh, interesting. I mean, the ethnic food in LA is just
it's
better.
It's just better. We have Michelin star restaurants in the Bay Area, but we not the like.
Yeah. The food of the people.
The food of the people. That's right.
So now that the last team has been formed, every team is up all night prepping.
That's wild. They made them. I read that they were up for 36 hours.
Oh, our friend said this is elder abuse. I mean, that poor chef on, the one who got booted, he came back from grocery shopping at 2 a.m.
Oh, my God.
I mean, usually that white spoon is, he's got his old timey nightgown and sleeping cap, and he's got a sleepy time tea by 9 p.m., I think. You know, he's not up at 2 a.m. They work through the night. Triple Star is seen chopping these dumpling skins like a maniac. His shoulders must have been so sore. He was just hunched over all night. We finally get to see the customers the next day.
And?
They are mukbang.
Mukbangers.
Content creators. These are people who eat a shit ton on video for a living. They call them gourmands, right? I was like, I had to look up gourmand. I was like, because I thought gourmand was a fancy term.
Right, like gourmet.
Yeah, like you have a high taste.
Yes.
That's really, though, the definition is people who kind of overeat.
Overeat, really? Mm-hmm.
Or like just like eat, like to eat and maybe overeat, which is a very good description for these guys, because these guys, their job is to stuff their faces with enough food to feed an elephant. I mean, these guys are insane.
I really don't understand the concept. I mean, granted, I am a consumer and I like to watch some of these things, but some of it is just fascination and disgust.
Yeah.
Because they really overeat. And there was a girl early in the history of mukbangs. She was young. She was very, very thin. And she ate so much. Then I found out through a documentary that she would work out for 4 hours a day. So she would eat and then just work out.
But she's got to be purging, right?
She must be. Because how could you consume that much? But like, it was so stressful for her, because
her
body. She didn't want to gain weight, you know, and so she was doing this for a living and making good money and I think able to take care of her family, but it was destroying her body. And then she got canceled for something, so then she stopped. But there was one time when we
is
had
that the trajectory for every for Korean celebrity.
It is
rise to stardom. Truly. And then they cancel.
They
you.
Don't want to see anybody succeed.
No. Anyway,
but
sorry.
There was a time when we had gone to someone's wedding. The next morning, everybody was hungover. So we went to a local halongtang place. And I was sitting at a table and another table of friends was sitting a few feet away. And I look up and I notice that they're all staring at me. And I was like, what? And they said, you should have a mukbang. Because the way you eat just is so fascinating. I mean, I used to also eat very fast and I'm full of expression.
You make a lot of slurping noises.
Yeah, I could have been a millionaire if I just took their advice.
Ugh, but so unhealthy, because it's not like they're eating celery and carrot sticks. They're eating just ramen and spicy things and dumplings. It's terrible. I did see a thing on TikTok, obviously, where they had brought...
Just say it was the New York Times.
Yeah.
The same thing now.
A Korean doctor did a study of a few of them and he took images of their stomachs and compared it to just like a regular person. And they're saying their stomachs just start bigger. So they're saying a lot of these guys train by just slowly stretching their stomach over time.
Yeah.
And so their stomachs are just bigger in general. And then they expand way bigger. So they let them eat and then they let a normal person eat. And they're just saying the mukbang or stomach expands like the entire cavity. It's pretty cool to see. And a normal person just doesn't expand that much. So just physically, they're a little bit different. And then they're saying also that their metabolism is just faster. So they pass this food through. Basically, they eat and shit. And like they don't absorb any of the calories, really. And so that's why a lot of them don't gain weight. And I'm sure they're also purging.
Yeah. I mean, fascinating to see the people that were judging on this episode. Many of them were quite thin. A few are larger. One who I know is Lee Kuk-ju, and she's a comedian. And she's always had kind of weight issues, I think, since she was younger. But everyone else seemed quite thin, and I was very shocked by it.
But they're all mukbangers. They're not like other celebrity types who just eat a lot.
Lee Kuk-ju, for sure, she's a comedian and does a bunch of other stuff. But I think she found a niche in mukbangs and has been putting a lot of her energy in there. But the rest are kind of celebrities in their own right because of how many people subscribe and view and have been able to do other things. I always talk about this, but I try very hard to live a very healthy life. And then I like go get my blood drawn or whatever, get a physical. And they're like, oh, this is not good. This is not good. And I'm like, what the hell? My husband, on the other hand, does not eat very healthy. He really doesn't ever exercise. He has some other bad habits. He just got a physical. And the fucking person there was like, are you a runner?
No. No.
And then.
Does he even own running shoes?
No.
I've never seen that man in a sneaker.
He ran once. Well, that's not true. We've run a few times together, but he ran once when we were in Italy for our honeymoon because we had eaten just so much pasta and he was
like
feeling...
10 years ago?
Yeah, 10 years ago.
When the last time you remember running or seeing him run was 10 years ago?
Yeah. And then she straight up is like, are you a runner? And he's like texting me. He's like, oh my God, my health screen is just like so great. She asked me if I'm a runner. And then she said, I think they ran a blood test and then they said, your body processes food really well.
Oh, wow.
And so it never goes to other parts of his body.
Sticks.
It's just like it just goes to waste.
Jesus.
So, I mean, to his credit, I mean, it's not really to his credit, but to his ancestors' credit, he's just got great genes. So he could have been a mukbanger.
What's as interesting to me is not only how these mukbangers do it, but why people watch it. So I looked this up on the NIH website, which is basically the New York Times of health. The NIH website says viewers watch these mukbangs because if a person is unable to consume the food they want because it's not readily available, they can find solace in the fact that they can watch a video of someone else eating it and getting the same satisfaction.
Right.
It's also, they say, a form of escape for viewers from their day-to-day lives, I think, which is all what social media and YouTube is.
I think also in Korea, it started out because so many people were alone, living alone, or, you know, didn't have as many friends or whatever. And it was a way to connect with people. And I think because diet culture is so big, it does feel a little bit like you're living vicariously through watching somebody eat something that you really want.
Yeah. But then people like us who have very little self-control
will go and eat it. Yeah.
If I want someone to eat a ramen,
I
will drive to the store, buy a ramen. Bring it home, cook it, and eat it, no matter what time of day it is.
Yeah, so then they gave these people 1 million won, which is about $1,000. And I was like, how are they going to spend that much money? Because these are not, I mean, of course, the gazillionaires, they charged over $50 for some of their meals. But even then, you'd have to order...
Yeah, do the math, Julia. Do the math. 20 of those
to get to $1,000, which who's going to eat that much?
I don't think that's the point. The point is, like, you have unlimited funds, basically. Yeah, right. They basically gave them an open checkbook and said, go do as what you can. Like, tear this place down.
Yeah.
And they, I wouldn't want to be the bathroom attendant at that warehouse.
After. There will be noodles and cut up carrots and peas in that toilet.
It'll be like the Volaris airplane, if anybody remembers that story from a few pods ago. So, I mean, a lot of episode 9 is just watching these people eat and talk about what they're eating and back and forth.
I love that they had gloves that just they pulled out of their bag.
Yeah, these people literally slurp mountains of food with sauce all over their faces for millions of people, but they needed their dainty gloves. So demure, so mindful.
So mindful, so cutesy.
The lowest selling team is the underdog team. They are automatically kicked off. Very unceremoniously, the lights turn off, just goodbye. Honestly, they looked relieved.
Yeah, they're like, I mean, especially Chef On. He's like,
I need a shower.
I need an IV.
Of the rest, only 4 can stay. So this is now a judge's choice. Chef Jung Ji-sun, the queen of dim sum, she was automatically put through because her item was the most sold dish out of everybody's. It was her dim sum. Triple Star gets put through. Chef Napoli Mafia goes through and Edward Lee goes through. So now it's down to 4 black spoons versus 4 white spoons. It always makes me very suspicious when things are even that they chose based on evening out the 2 teams. So everyone gets to go home. They go to take a nap and now they're back in the kitchen for the top 8 competition. They're going from 8 remaining chefs to the final 2. So we're now in the home stretch. With still 3 episodes to go, so they're really going to draw these out.
Oh, actually, I wanted to talk about something. When they were doing the eliminations and on Chef Edward's team, it was kind of down to that the last 4. It was Napoli Mafia, Chef Edward, and then 2 older women. One who was the cafeteria chef and another white spoon who's like his mom's age. And when Napoli Mafia got picked first, he started to choke up and I think he felt really bad towards these women who's like, they're my mother's age, you know, and there's like a real deep connection. So I have to do a cry count in these 2 episodes. I cried so much. I'm really becoming very much a Napoli Mafia fan because he has such a soft side to him. They acknowledge that he was feeling that way towards them, that he was feeling sorry towards them. And they were like, it's okay. You did great.
Go win.
You deserve this.
Well, I think it's an insult to cafeteria worker. Like, she's
late 40s. Like 45.
Yeah.
She's probably 45. But he's probably 15 like 20 years older. Something.
Yeah. Okay, maybe she's 20 years older, but I was like, I mean, bro, come on.
Actually, him and Dorai, Cooking Maniac, love to say these older people. They keep referencing how old these people are. I'm like, full shot. They're not that much older than you. And then Chef Edward had a very kind thing to say about Napoli Mafia and how he stood out as a partner in the challenge and he helped him to communicate and adapt their dishes. And so I thought that pairing was very sweet to watch.
Yeah. So to get down to the final two, the competition is to cook the dish that shaped your life. Judge On says, if it's not genuine, I'm going to hate it. Don't try to make up stories and fake it. I'm just glad there's no more Chinese chefs with their fucking Dongpo Ro to say it shaped their life. Bullshit. If you could make a dish that shaped your life, what would it be?
I would say it is a cream of mushroom chicken.
Ooh, okay.
With kimchi on the side, which is not really like a dish, and Chef On will criticize me for this. But when I was growing up, I moved to Oregon when I was in fourth grade. And this was the first time we had lived with like just all white people. Our neighborhood was all white. And we had a neighbor who was very, very sweet. And she took my mom under her wing and taught her how to make all of these, you know, quote unquote, American dishes. Mm-hmm. And one of them was cream of mushroom soup. And now I know it's like the cream of mushroom can, onion soup mix. You know, it's like classic suburban American mom dish. And then you would dump that with like chicken breast, whatever, and rice on the bottom. Oh. And then you would bake it in the oven or something like that.
A casserole.
Casserole.
Like it's a very American 50s thing for a mom to make a casserole.
Totally. And those were the kinds of moms that were around us. And so she taught her how to make this. And I loved it. But of course, like we would always have like kimchi with it or some Korean side dish. And that was, I would say, a very pivotal moment in my life. I think similar to Chef Edward, where I was struggling a lot with who I was and being Korean, being American, being like not enough of anything. And for some reason, that dish really just stands out to me. It was kind of a coming of age type of dish, becoming an American kind of dish.
Right.
So I think that's what I would say. What about you? Dongpo Ro? Or maybe it's Kung Pao chicken from Pan Express. No, little mix of American and Chinese.
There's definitely ones from my childhood, but the one that comes up first is that it was a jjakbapan recipe. It was a mustard chicken recipe. And I made it for my now husband when we moved into our first apartment together.
Oh.
And I just felt like such an adult successfully making this chicken dish that was extremely annoying and hard to make. And so I feel like that was a nice ushering into adulthood was that one jjakbapan chicken dish. Probably haven't made it since.
Yeah, I don't feel like I haven't heard of that dish since.
You've got to pan fry it, then stick it in the oven. God. It's way too many steps for now. Although this week we had a friend come over. He's a single guy. He eats a lot of takeout food. And so whenever he comes over, I want to make him like a homemade dish. So I made chicken parmesan, which I normally don't make because it is a lot of...
It is a lot of like...
Breading and frying and then, and then baking and then I got to make the pasta. I use fresh herbs, which I never do. And my husband just sat there just giving me side eye, being like, I never get this. You never make this for us. how things have fallen my days of chicken. So the chefs all come out with something very different. Jung Ji-sung comes with a fish dish. She says opened her eyes to Chinese cuisine and it helped her get through her younger days as a chef in a kitchen with a lot of men. She gets a very low score. It does not seem like these guys like her fish.
Yeah. And I don't know if she actually was the first one to go, but if she was, I think that never serves you well because, you know, you're kind of being graded on a curve.
Right.
And when you're the first one out the gate, people are like, oh, I mean, this is mid. But then if everyone else after you is mid too, they don't, I think they get scored higher because they're like comparing it to yours.
Yep. Judge On gives her an 82 out of 100.
This guy.
Edward Lee, he does his inside out bibimbap.
We got to talk about this.
I know. It's his take on a bibimbap. He comes up and he talks about his personal story about his mixed identity. You must have been crying.
I didn't cry quite at that part. I did not. But I identified very closely with what he was talking about.
Right. He's talking about like, am I Korean? Am I American? As he's saying his speech about this and how he like feels like part of both worlds and he never knows where he stands and one foot in, one foot out. My husband looks over at me and is like, oh, good luck with Juliet. I was like, oh, I know.
This is the story of Koreans who are born in America. Your husband doesn't understand because he wasn't born here either. It's like the people who were born here and had to straddle two cultures, they're the ones that really struggled. And I think the problem here is that Chef On, he grew up in Korea. Yeah. And he immigrated when he was 13. So he probably identifies way more as being Korean than he does as being American. So he was a lot more critical about this dish. And I didn't get it. It's like your husband. I'm like, you don't get it. So you can't say that to me. Just like Chef On, like, you can't be critical of Chef Edward because you didn't have the same experience. Even though he's like, yeah, I also lived in America. I'm like, no, bro, it's not the same. But Edward Lee's dish was so innovative. And I feel that the people that made something innovative versus people who just made dishes that were like a literal dish that they had done before that was representative of a time, it was very different than Edward, who had made a completely new dish that's never been seen before. It looked very good. And the fact that Chef Peck gave him a 97 versus Chef On, who gave him an 82.
I mean, of course, Chef On ruins this nice moment. The guy is pouring his heart out to you about how he doesn't feel like he fits in anywhere. Yes. And then Chef On goes, but is it bibimbap if you don't mix it? Is it really bibimbap? Ugh, I am so over this guy. He says he misrepresented an iconic Korean dish. How do you feel about this?
Well, I do know, having watched a lot of Top Chef, a lot of chefs get criticism for calling something and maybe going too far from the actual dish.
Right.
So I get a little bit of where he's coming from. However, I think the story attached to it was really why he called it a bibimbap, because it's like a mixture. But I also think Chef On is really critical of Chef Edward.
I agree.
Like, warranted a little bit. I think it also maybe comes from the fact that he's like, you're an American chef. Whereas Chef Peck was so moved by the story that he gave him a really high score because of it. So I thought even Chef Edward Lee was like, I don't understand why there was such a big delta between the two scores.
I know. Oh, I can tell you, because Chef On's a dick.
Yeah.
Everybody else brings out their sad stories. Auntie Omakase number one gives us a real tearjerker. She had a hard life growing up, and these hand-cut noodles basically kept her family afloat and has paid for her life, and she has now been very successful. Again,
very low scores.
Low score. I mean, Chef On gives her an 85, like, will not be moved.
But he's the one that said in the beginning, like, oh, I don't want you to bullshit a story.
Yeah. And then he also says, oh, I hope people can visit your restaurant to see what Korea flavors can really be like. Oh, this guy.
Yeah. And then he gives Kicking Maniac an 89, whereas Chef Peck is like, the flavor was not quite right. He gave Cooking Maniac an 89 for his French onion soup, and then he gave Chef Edward Lee an 82.
Cooking Maniac makes a gnarly onion soup. His story also, tearjerker.
Made me cry.
It made you cry?
Cry count 4.
Okay. He says people think he looks scary and like a thug. He sees himself just like these onions, as ugly, but then like his soup is rough around the edges, but it'll warm your soul. Again, he's pouring his heart out. He's talking about how he thinks he's ugly and how he's had to deal with that his whole life.
And then Chef Peck goes, well, you are kind of scary.
And is like, well, if you don't like the way you look, why don't you change it?
Go get some plastic surgery.
Yeah. Instead of telling him, like, no matter, you know, it doesn't matter how you look. It's in your heart. And like, look at what you can cook. It's no. Like a real Korean.
Real Korean.
Get some eyelid surgery. Get a nose job. Problem solved. It was classic.
Well, to Chef On's credit, Judge On's credit, he did say, you look the coolest when you're concentrating on cooking. So he gave him a little bit of a boost for that.
Chef On says, chef's intent should be taken into account. I'm like, then where were you with Chef Edward? Chef On also says he'd never give a dish a perfect score. 90 is the highest he'd go. If that's true, then why is the scale 100?
Right.
This fucking guy is exhausting. I feel for his wife. This poor wife must be a very patient woman. I cannot stand
But, you know,
guy.
He says that he never cooks at home. So it's just his wife that cooks. He's probably like, this is a 6.
A 6 out of 100. And the highest I give is 10. So, you know, you do the math. Again, with Chef On and the double standards, Triple Star makes his interpretation of a clam chowder. He also has a very nice story about being in the West. Another Corey Lee shout out.
And he would go to Pier 39 to get clam chowder, which I love this story because it's so close to us. You know, we used to live in the city. I once went to Pier 39 with my husband to do a clam chowder taste test because we're like, which one is the best? Mm-hmm. You know, they're all kind of the same. And they were all kind of the same.
All kind of the same.
There was one that was a standout. It was the one that's like on the far left.
Oh, that's real. That's very helpful. Yes. Thank you. So guys, if you're visiting, go to the one on the far left.
Well, it's the first one. It's the first one in that row.
I actually do know what you're talking about. Chef On is like, if you're going to present it as fine dining, then every single vegetable has to be cut the same, you know, millimeters. It has to match the caviar. And he did it. It was great. And so he was like, it tasted delicious. Then he goes, but would have been better with no fish. You should have thought more about that. The fuck is this guy? So annoying.
Again, I think he judges Triple Star a little harsher because he's his protege.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Chef Jang Ho Jun, the other white spoon, brings out a black onion
dish. Oh my God. And he gave him a fucking 90?
Yeah, that's like an Outback Steakhouse bloomin' onion.
Bloomin' onion.
The chili's awesome blossom.
It also looked gross. I was like, I don't want to eat that.
It looks burned as shit.
Yeah.
We also see Napoli Mafia. I mean, another pasta dish.
Another pasta dish. But I think what Napoli Mafia did that other people did not do, other than Edward Lee, is that he made something innovative. It was a blend of this time Italy and Korea. And I think Napoli strategically was mindful that Chef Peck is from like the similar region. Mm-hmm. So he knows these flavors. And the presentation was beautiful. I think the story was beautiful. He did things with like the pasta and the crab that really has never been done before. So I think that's what makes him stand out.
And I think Chef On just has a hard on for him. He really does. I think he really gives this guy, Napoli Mafia, and Cooking Maniac a lot of credit. And then lastly, we see the leader of the White Spoons, Chef Choi. He does his interpretation of pasta alla vongole.
See, this is my other problem. So Chef On gave him an 88. He said it was innovative, so good. And then later, Chef Choi says, I forgot the garlic.
Right.
And how did Chef On not realize that? But he gave him an 88. This is what I'm saying. I don't get it.
I saw that as, oh my gosh, he's such a good chef. His flavors are so good that without even garlic, you can make this Italian dish tasty. But yeah, I don't know.
Justice for Edward Lee.
Justice for Edward Lee. My mother-in-law loves vongole, so I do make it every time she comes.
Oh,
a little white wine, yeah. It's just the clams are annoying, but otherwise it's an easy dish. And then that's it for these two episodes. Chef Napoli Mafia has beaten everybody with the highest score on this competition. So it looks like
he's definitely advancing. Advance to the final.
And then everybody else is left to see what else is in store to get that last spot.
Endless cooking hell.
Oh, is that what it's called?
That's what it's called.
Oh, good God. So that's exciting. We will see what that means next week. This leads us to the Daily Dish. What dish from these two episodes? There were so many good dishes in these two episodes. Which one did you want to try the most?
It's got to be Napoli Mafia's kegukchi pasta.
Ooh,
the last dish that he just did. I love those little candied crabs. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That looked really cute.
And the broth, I bet, is so flavorful. With pasta filled with shrimp. It's like a little dumpling. Ugh, I want to try it.
I want to try the Edward Lee bibimbap. And I saw...
Don't call it bibimbap.
Rice ball? I saw on some guy's TikTok, they were showing the soft opening of Edward Lee's new restaurant. Yes. It's called Shia in Washington, D.C. And he's serving those bibimbap balls there.
Oh, he is.
Yes.
Good for him.
So when we go storm the Capitol on
January 6th.
Yeah, be there, guys. We'll go have dinner at Shia after.
Can I tell you how much of a liberal town we live in that my son came home and he's like, this girl, blank her name. Her parents voted for Trump. We all said boo to her.
What?
And then I went to go volunteer and she wasn't there. And I was telling my husband, I was like, she's probably at a parade. She's probably gone off to Texas on like, she's celebrating somewhere. Or she's been kicked out of the class.
Seriously, she's probably in school jail.
I'm not kidding. The kids were shaming her so badly. My son was like, ew, ew. And then my daughter, who's just loves to be defiant and will be defiant till the end of the day, she goes, I love Trump. I was like, excuse me? She goes, he's so beautiful.
No. You better be careful where she's saying that.
Exactly.
Ooh, child.
Keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
Or you're going to go to school jail too.
So usually we end with a marry, F, kill, but there comes a time in every one of our journeys on these shows where marry, F, kill, we're just recycling.
Yes.
There's only so many people left. Everyone knows who I want to kill. Chef on.
I want to kill Chef Choi. I'm over him.
Oh, okay.
I'm so over him. Yes. I thought that move towards Chef on, the older Chef on, Japanese chef, was just rude. I don't like him.
I think really we're just like, get these male egos out of here. Like, there's a lot of male egos there in the chefs, but then they'll cry and tell us a story, so we love them. These guys are just too male for us. Get them out. Okay, that was it for Culinary Class Wars episodes 9 and 10. We have two more, 11 and 12, next week, and we finish it off and we see who is crowned the culinary war king or queen. Until then, be well, and we will talk to you next week. Bye.